Hello, it is October 20th, 2014. You are looking live at Kansas City, Missouri. This is episode 451 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. That is, in fact, actually a tiny little fib. I'm recording this on Sunday evening. I leave early in the morning for Kansas City and the World Series tomorrow on Monday morning. So by the time that you listen to this, I will be in Kansas City, even though I am currently in Athens, Georgia. This morning, I ran a half marathon, the Ath Half, as it's known here, the fifth annual Ath Half. This is my first one. I'm probably, if it's generally around the time of the World Series, I'm probably not going to be able to do that many. But I did do today's because I, again, I said I'm not leaving till tomorrow slash today. So I ran it. It's my second one. Everything hurts, as to be expected. I have no idea. As someone that loves running half marathons and looks forward to doing another one, I will never be running a full marathon. I have no idea why people would do that. The last thing on my brain when I finished both this race and last year's race in Columbus, Georgia at Fort Benning, the Soldier Marathon and Half Marathon, the last thing on my mind at the end of either one of those races was, hey, let's do that shit again. So, anyway, so there you go. Everything hurts except for my voice because they don't let you talk during those things. It's silence. They're like monks. Half marathoners, they're like monks. And so, you know, I will not be putting one of those stickers on the back of my car. Anyway, the World Series starts Tuesday. This is my third World Series I will be covering. In 2009, I covered the Yankees-Phillies series, though I did actually only cover the New York games. Last year, I covered the Cardinals and the Red Sox, and this year I will be in both Kansas City and, alas, San Francisco. So I'm very excited. I love the World Series. It is an absolute honor for me to be in attendance at the World Series. I cannot wait. I'm sad the Cardinals aren't in it, but for crying out loud, it's the World Series. If you can't get excited about the World Series, you're not really much of a baseball fan, which is fine. Actually, if you're not much of a baseball fan, you just probably won't like today's podcast, because today's podcast is with Jeff Passan, an MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports and a longtime associate of mine, a graduate of Syracuse University, where I would say three-quarters of the people I hung around with in the media world while I lived in New York went to Syracuse. So I knew Jeff before he was Jeff. He knew me, I guess, before whatever I am. And we're going to chat today about the World Series. He lives in Kansas City, so I suspect, you know, that might come up. World Series time, starting this week. Let's go. All right, Jeff, first off, thank you for coming on. You have been in Kansas City throughout all of this postseason, correct?
Most of it. I guess there haven't been a whole lot of games played here, actually.
They
took care of the Angels so quickly. There was the wild card game, and then the two against Baltimore. So there have been only four home games to get to the World Series.
Yeah, it's generally a weird thing of this postseason because people keep talking about how great it is, and I think it's been great too. There's been all these close games, all these comebacks, all these back and forth games, but we're only three games over the minimum. Like, there's only been three games above if everyone would have just swept. And I wonder if it's for the best, because I feel like my heart almost couldn't take it anyway. With what was going on. So if it were actually, these games were actually going to six and seven games, what do you think of the postseason for? Do you agree with the people that are like, this is one of the best ones, or is that still, you have to see the World Series to decipher that?
I think there's a little recency bias as far as that goes. I think it has been great because of all of the close games, but there just haven't been a lot of games. I mean, these really haven't been series. It's been domination almost across the board. And I would have liked to have more win-or-go-home games than the wild cards, but the ones that have been played have been pretty awesome.
Yeah, I wonder, all the series kind of feel like the 2005 World Series. It's like a sweep, but a really close one. Like, it just like it feels, yeah, like if the whole, they've all kind of felt like that one. Like the Pythagorean record for these teams is not impressive. They've just won all three games.
That series, it's interesting you bring that series up, because I think that series gets lost because it was a sweep, but yeah. The starting pitching that the White Sox had that year, the Podsednik home run, the long, what was that, 16-inning game?
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of memorable games, I think, in that series as well.
Was it Mike Lamb? Is he the one that hit the homer?
I think it was Jeff Blum, right?
Jeff Blum, that's right. I lost, I got my MBs together.
You got your four-letter last name, journeyman third baseman, mixed up.
Well, I'm sure they probably get themselves mixed up as well. Do you? So I'm curious. So you'll be at the World Series. How many? This is only my third World Series I've ever attended. 2009, which was just the home games in New York. 2000 last year, and then this year. How many World Series have you been to?
This will be number 11 for me.
Wow! So
yeah, I know. I've been doing this a fair amount of time. My first one was Red Sox in 2004, which was a pretty good first one to have. And I really do think this one is going to be a spectacular World Series. I think these teams are so evenly matched, and their strengths are so similar that there are going to be a lot of really close, low-scoring games, and it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I want to get into that a little bit, but first, you know, I mean, you know, you live in, like, Kansas City is your home. This is your area. What is it like? Like, you've been covering, even before you went to Yahoo and you were the Kansas City Star, you've been covering a lot of baseball games, a lot of very meaningless, depressing, sad baseball games in Kansas City for a very long time. What is, like, could you ever have anticipated this? And B, if you ever thought, you know, when you ever have those late conversations of, wow, imagine what this place would be like if they ever actually had any success. Did it meet those expectations or exceed them?
I think it's exceeded them, actually. The way that this town has fallen in love with this team and really embraced it is, I don't know if it's like anything I've seen before. Just because when you have 30 years of not having a World Series, I guess Boston in 04 is probably the best comparison. Maybe Chicago in 05, but Kansas City has had such a tortured sporting history that just the wild card game in and of itself was an accomplishment and achievement. You know, the Royals made the playoffs. Like, I never thought that I would say that. And to have that game become the classic that it did instantaneously, and to have the Royals just run roughshod the way they have through the Angels and the Orioles, I didn't expect it. I didn't see it. I mean, I'm the guy who back in June was saying you should trade James Shields.
Right.
And I thought that because the Royals have the pieces in place to make a run, not just in 2014, but in 15 through 20, I think. And there are a lot of good young players. They have a good farm system. They have the right people in place at the top, I think. And my only question, really, with this team was, would Ned Yost screw things up? And it's been the opposite of that, shockingly. Ned Yost has evolved over the last couple of weeks, and certainly a couple of weeks before that, to show that this is the type of managing he can actually do well. And, you know, when they're managing to win, he's good. He really is. I think the bunting is the only thing that I have any beef with at this point. But if you can look at what Ned Yost has done, the only mistakes pitching-wise he's made, Kelvin Herrera certainly coming in the wild card game was not a smart thing to do. And you could argue that Jason Vargas being left in to face Trout, Pujols, and I think it was Kendrick in the sixth inning in game one in Anaheim, wasn't smart, but you know, he was recounting yesterday, and it was really interesting that Vargas came to him before that inning and said, I can get these guys out. And that's Ned Yost right there. He believes in his guys, and he trusts them, and when they say they can do something, he's going to let them try to do it, and will fall on the sword afterward. And Jason Vargas bounds into the dugout after he gets those three outs with Nori Aoki doing the circus catches in right field, and says to Ned Yost, I told you I'd get him. And that right there, I mean, that's how the Royals are playing right now. They think they can beat the 27 Yankees.
Yeah, that is, to me, the craziest thing about the Royals, because history is, of course, littered with pitchers who all thought they could get this guy. And, you know, and who thought they could go that next inning. And managers who are like, I'm going to trust in my guys. And it totally did not work out and everything fell apart. But the thing about, like, I can't figure out, first of all, on one hand, you look at Yost, and it's weird because he actually seems like a better manager than he was, like, 6 days ago. And not just because of the game. You're seeing him make adjustments, like him being more aggressive, pulling out the starting pitcher. But also, just the note, like, it almost feels like this team is specifically put together to have Ned Yost manage it. Like, it feels like if you put, like, a Madden or a more sabermetrically oriented manager, maybe it wouldn't work as well. It's weird to see a team like Kansas City built for the postseason, but they actually do kind of feel that way.
And he was, you know what, he was forthright about that yesterday, too. He was saying, if you don't evolve, you're going to die. And that's what he's done. He has evolved over the last few weeks, I think, into putting Kelvin Herrera in for to it, to putting Wade Davis in and to being more aggressive with Greg Holland. And in the playoffs, that's what you have to do. And I think Medios doesn't get enough credit, frankly, for the way that he deployed his bullpen during the regular season. He was pretty strategic about, he didn't want to burn Wade Davis out early in the season. So if you look back in April and May, Wade Davis wasn't pitching back-to-back games. I think he ended up throwing something like the 10th most pitches among relief pitchers, with something like 1,210 during the regular season, whereas Dellin Betances, really his equal in numbers, the strikeout rate's similar, the walk rate's similar. He ended up something like 1,400 pitches. And if the Yankees had made the postseason, Dellin Betances, I think, was going to be in grave danger of burnout, whereas Wade Davis, I talked with him and asked him about this, he feels as strong as he has. And the days off here certainly are helping with that. I think that once the World Series comes around, it's going to be interesting to see, with all these close games, Ned Yost is not going to be afraid to put in Wade Davis down a run. And are they going to be able to sustain him over the six or seven games I think the series is going to take?
And see, that's still kind of amazing, too, because I agree. It feels like he's gotten better, particularly after those first couple of games. But it's weird. This is a guy that was actually fired because they didn't want him managing in the postseason. Like, is there a vindication for him on this? What is he personality-wise? I feel like I don't actually know him as a character all that well. Is he low-key? Is he outgoing? What kind of guy is he?
I think he is very self-assured. Frankly, more self-assured than he deserves to be, considering...
Like all geniuses.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the interesting part of Ned Yost. We've been joking that the smartest man in the world is going to be Ned Yost for the World Series ring. Yeah. And that is how he's going to feel if it comes to that. And as far as vindication goes, I think that would be the vindication. If he gets a ring right now, everything that has been said about Ned Yost will be moot, because he will be one of, what, six or seven active managers who have World Series rings.
And, of course, one of the other ones is Bruce Bochy, who I feel like managed backwards, forwards, rings around Mike Matheny in every possible way in that NLCS.
Not that you're bitter about that or anything.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Listen, I'm an impartial journalist. I'm just out for truth and objectivity. Listen, if Mike Matheny makes bad moves, I'm obliged to document them. But yes, Bochy, of course, has done this now, I guess, going for his third title in 6 years. And the Giants, in general, one of the things I find impressive about Bochy, these have been, even though there's some guys who are the same, Posey, Sandoval, Bumgarner, this is still a very different Giants team than one in 2012, and specifically in 2010. And when you look at, like, you know, everyone late in the year was like, oh, they lost Pagan. He's their starter. He's the guy that gets them going. And they've just kind of rolled right through. Is there any secret to what the Giants are doing, or are they just falling in the right place at the right time?
I don't get what the Giants are doing. I honestly don't understand what the secret sauce is there and how they keep doing it. Is it contact hitting? Is it bullpen deployment? What is it exactly? I don't think anyone can pinpoint it exactly and say this is the reason that the Giants are there, but fact is, they're there again, and one of the only constants from 2010 and 2012 still here is Bruce Bochy. Yeah. And so it's not one of those things where I think you can say Bruce Bochy is unquestionably the reason that they're still there, but it's got to be a part of it. It's got to be a factor, and he's one of the best managers there is. He has earned himself a spot in the Hall of Fame on account of these 5 years alone, and the amount of respect there, not just inside the clubhouse, but throughout baseball for him, is pretty shocking. Considering where he was after San Diego, I think that there was a thought that, okay, this could be a good manager if put in the right situation, but to see Bruce Bochy become the guy that he has, I think surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, and I think we get so fired up on managers, or maybe it's just me and Matheny, but we get so fired up about managers, but it feels like, you know, when Bochy was in San Diego, he was known as a bad postseason manager. He could never get out of the first round. They lost to the Cardinals a couple of years, and it was always just like, that's kind of the thing that he was kind of known for in a lot of ways, and Yost, of course, was fired before he could have had a chance to manage the postseason, and on one hand, like, I feel like the best manager in the postseason this year was Buck Showalter. I feel like he may be the best manager.
Agreed.
Maybe the best manager in baseball. But and it's weird because he kept making smart moves. They just didn't work because they ran into the wood chipper that was Ned Yost and the Kansas City Royals. So I'm starting to think that maybe Like, maybe you just become a good postseason manager if you win. But then I guess Bob Brindley would be the example of the opposite of that. Like, I it's just the idea of managing, because it feels like we spend so much time now, particularly, you know, in a sabermetric world where managers supposedly don't make that much difference. Lineup doesn't make that much difference. They're supposed to be these middle managers that get along with the clubhouse. And then we spend the entire postseason banging our head against the wall about managers. Do we overreact to managers in the postseason?
You know, I think we're at this level of cognitive dissonance when it comes to managers. We want to sit here and say, okay, a manager is probably worth plus or minus 5 wins a season, usually on the closer side to the minus, because managing, it's much easier to give away a game than it is to win a game. But I think Ned Yost and Bruce Bochy both this postseason have won games for their teams through their strategic deployments. And when it comes down to such a small sample size, it's very easy to say that a manager won or lost a game. These games mean more. These games don't have as much implication over the long term. When you're managing a game in June, June 1st, you have to think about June 20th, and you have to think about July, and you have to think about August and September. But when you're managing in October, you are thinking about today and only today. And the second you get caught thinking about tomorrow, you end up looking like a manager who was like Lou Piniella a few years back. I think it was with Carlos Zambrano, maybe, saying, you know, we were just hoping to get him the ball the next day. And the next day sometimes doesn't exist. So you have to be much more aggressive, and I think that's one thing that Ned Yost is. He's very aggressive, sometimes to a fault, but this postseason it's been absolutely, you know, to the benefit of the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Sam Miller from Baseball Perspectives I hate, this is such a dumb phrase to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, a particularly brilliant tweet. So, but,
you know what? Brevity, I know.
It feels weird to say. But, like brilliant is like cold fusion. You know, like a tweet is just very clever and very smart. But anyway, so he had this tweet saying, like, maybe he thinks this might be, and I'm obviously going to use more than 140 characters because that's just how I talk. But his argument was, he basically said, this is the postseason where the player, like, if a player strikes out, it's the fault of the manager of putting him in that position, or the general manager of not getting a better player. And that, like, we've almost become so wonky about roster construction and strategy, and there's so much going on with that. Like, players almost can't be goats anymore. Like, they can be heroes, but they can be goats. Like, first off, do you think that's true, or is it just you know, me reading too many people from Baseball Prospectus and getting too many insiders? And two, is that good for the game or bad for the game if it is true?
No, I think it's interesting you say that, because I remember a few years ago with the Ned Yost team from which he got fired, I believe. This was maybe the Zach Greinke Brewers team, not the Sabathia team, it was the Zach Greinke Diamondback series, and Greinke had essentially forced a trade out of Kansas City because he said he wanted to play meaningful baseball. And so he goes to the postseason and absolutely craps his pants for two postseason starts. And after the second one, I said, I wrote a column saying Zach Greinke needs to step up. And I got destroyed by the small sample size crew saying, essentially, how can you say this? It's just one game, just two games. Why are you putting this back on Zach Greinke? Well, October, you know, baseball is a tiny sample size. And if you say you want to be part of a postseason and then you go out and you don't pitch very well, well, that sort of goes against your whole theory and your whole philosophy of why you wanted to be in the postseason, to go out and win a World Series ring. And so I think that our knowledge has grown exponentially over the last, 10, 15 years as far as what really, truly does matter in baseball. But what hasn't changed is the idea that October is a crapshoot, and that sometimes, as Billy Beane said, your stuff is just not going to work in October. And I think it's sad in some respects that everything gets thrown back on the management team, when ultimately it is the players who are going to win and lose games. Whatever move Ned Yost makes, It's going to look like a genius move if it works out, and it's going to look like a foolish move otherwise. And people sometimes have a difficulty separating process and outcome. And I think if the process is right, that's all you can ask for from a manager, because the outcome is what's dependent on the players.
And it's funny because to another thing involving Sam Miller, Zachary Levine, a fellow baseball perspectives writer who I like very much, and he was on their podcast, and he was after the division series, he was saying, you know what, I actually really hate this, because he was saying that like all the good teams are losing, like Washington, the best team in the National League, Anaheim, the best team in baseball, and he had a hard time wrapping his mind around the fact that isn't the World Series supposed to be about the best teams, and now we've got these crazy upsets, and now it's like almost the idea that he would like his baseball scored rotisserie style rather than head to head, I guess. And on one hand, I understand that. But on the other hand, I feel like I wonder if that's like the illusion of the Yankees. Like the Yankees run almost gave us this idea that like, oh no, there's just a regular thing that works in the playoffs and the best team wins, because that's what. And even though Yankees were not always the best team during those years, there's this thing that works in the playoffs, and I feel like, particularly this year, you've got two wildcard teams that I think most people agree were not the best teams in their league, really not by a lot. They've not only won in the postseason, they've cruised in the postseason. Do you think that's good? Does it bother you at the end of this year that, like, clearly I think Anaheim, Washington, and maybe Baltimore were the three best teams in baseball this year? Does baseball lose anything by those teams not being in the World Series? Does it matter?
No, I don't think so. I think that those were the three best teams during the regular season. If those were the three best teams playing when it truly matters most, then they would be there. But they didn't. And I don't know that a team is necessarily built to win in October. I think you can win all different types of ways in October. But I think that's part of the beauty of the game, actually, that as long as you get your lottery ticket, then you have a chance to win it. And that as long as the baseball is not substandard, which we don't know. Look, the Giants and Royals series could be full of errors, could be full of pathetic hitting, could be full of awful pitching. We don't know what it's going to be. But as long as it's competitive, as long as it's compelling, I don't care which two teams are playing. I just want to see good baseball this time of year, and I think that's what this postseason has given us. We've had a lot of really good baseball so far, and that's all I'm looking for right now.
So going back to this individual matchup for the World Series, there does seem, I wrote a column a while back saying that the interesting thing about the Royals is before they even went into the ALCS, but is that, you know, they not only have they not made the playoffs since 1985, but in many ways they actually feel like they are beamed here from the year 1985, and they play in a very 1985 way. Now, of course, that people forget that they beat Anaheim by hitting a lot of homers, but like generally speaking, like the way they play is that kind of style. The Giants are frankly not that dissimilar. They're not as speedy, but they certainly like make smart play. They don't have this overwhelming lineup. They're pitching, frankly, I think you can make an argument it's worse than the Royals, at least rotation wise. Definitely bullpen wise, but rotation wise as well. But it's funny, like when you look at these teams, it feels like, though it doesn't seem like there's going to be a lot of homers, which means of course there'll be a ton, but this seems like legitimately really exciting baseball. Like, and I don't mean that as a bad things were better in 1985, but like it is really exciting when Gore goes to steal a base or when Dyson does anything, you know, like it's really fun to watch those guys. And Buster Posey's exactly the type of player that I think we all claim to we want to root for. Do you think these teams in particular set up to have a particularly exciting series?
I do, because I see these games being close, and that's all we're really asking for. I mean, if there's a World Series where games are close, where the best relief pitchers get put in to hold on to leads, where every out feels like it counts, that's what makes for a good series. And, you know, the last two games of the ALCS to me were exactly like that. They were both 2-1 games. And they were 2-1 games that the Royals had to really hold on to those leads with. Because if you look back, I think the Royals scored their last run in Game 4 in the sixth inning. And all of a sudden, once the Kansas City Royals get a lead after the sixth inning, you don't feel like the game is over, but you feel like the game is in pretty good hands at that point. And there's a lot of drama in that, in wondering, will Kelvin Herrera, a guy who, in 2013 couldn't throw a pitch without it going out of the ballpark, and then in 2014 still hasn't given up a home run, will he be able to hold on to things? Same with Wade Davis. I don't believe he's given up a home run either this year, and he you know, it took until like July or August for him to give up his first extra base hit of the year. And then Greg Holland, a guy who got overused, frankly, toward the end of the year, whether it was with dry humps toward the end of the game because the thinner part of the Royals' bullpen was giving up leads and forcing him to get one-out saves, or for other overusage reasons, you know, will he be able to hold on to that lead? And all of those things, to me, just lead to this inherently interesting situation where they've been so good for so long now, I think we're just waiting for them to fail. And the failure of the Royals bullpen is going to be a monstrous story if and when it happens. And so from Kansas City side, it's that way. From the Giants side, it's a team that Bruce Bochy has been able to mix and match properly. He's got a very deep bullpen that he is willing to go to. And beyond Madison Bumgarner, you wonder just how long their starters can last. Jake Peavy, a guy in his mid-30s, can he do it? Tim Hudson, a guy in his late 30s, can he keep doing it? Ryan Vogelsong, a guy who's been a hero in playoff past, can he keep up with it? So there are a lot, to me, compelling characters involved in here and great storylines that are very natural. There's no narrative about this. I think that these storylines are legitimate, they're real, they're not created, and because of that, we're going to see all of them tested and see if they stand up to what we believe they are and what they have been.
To me, it feels like Bumgarner is the key to the Giants, just because, like, you know, he's the best pitcher. He's going to be the best pitcher however many times he goes out there. And, you know, he's been so good in the postseason in the past, and it's certainly been good this postseason. It does feel like, though, I always feel like that's such an illusion. Like, I feel like that's 2001, like, sneaking up on us and making us feel like that's just the way it is. It does feel like, It is weird because it feels like once the Giants score a run off one of those three guys, like the Royals better have like a 3-run lead, because it feels like that's why the Royals seem invincible is because of those three guys. And you talk to Orioles fans and they were just like, how did this team not go 162-0? Like, they were baffled how any team could possibly beat them. But the fact is, they are mortal people, and they probably are in danger of being overused in a short series like this. Is there a key to, like, do you think the first game is a key? Do you think the first two games in Kansas City, if San Francisco gets one of those first two, or and I guess if they get both, they're in great shape. If they get one of that first two, is there a fear that sinks into the Royals because they haven't lost yet?
I think if the Royals win the first two games, Bruce Bochy's got a really hard decision to make, and that is, do we bring Madison Bumgarner back on 3 days rest for game four and have him potentially for game seven? Because that's going to be the thought. If the Royals are up 2-0, that this is probably going to get to seven. At least that's going to be the perspective of the Giants. And so are they going to essentially scrub Ryan Vogelsong and be able to use him in game three or game five or game six if need be? And how does Madison Bumgarner fit into all this? I don't believe he's ever started on 3 days rest before. And he's been the guy who's been behind Tim Lincecum and Matt Cain in 2010 and Matt Cain in 2012. So he's never had this, I'm going to carry a team mantle thrust on him, but at this point, he is that guy, and he is the X factor in this series. If he can go out and shove the way that he has throughout the postseason, not just this year, but historically, then I think the Giants are going to be in really good shape. And game one, look, it's a 7-game series. You got to win four of them. Game one, on account of that, though, is exceedingly important, I think, for both sides.
So, I'm going to ask you a prediction in a second, but the first thing and the most important thing as far as I'm concerned, because there's nothing more depressing than a rainout in a World Series game. Kansas City has a rainout, so they're on notice for me. Is the weather looking okay, at least for the first couple of games? I'm not going to make your progress out a week, but it looks okay for the first couple of games.
It does. It's going to get chilly. I think it's supposed to get down to about 45 or 50 on Tuesday for Game 1. I think Game 2 is going to be a little bit warmer, but we are seasonably warm here in Kansas City, like high of between 70 and 75 the next couple of days, and rain isn't supposed to come until Thursday. So as long as Mother Nature doesn't want to take a leak on the festivities, I think we're going to be okay.
All right, good. And San Francisco, now it's funny because like my San Francisco is my – I've never been to Kauffman. I'm very embarrassed. I'm a Midwesterner. I'm a Cardinals fan, and I've never been to Kauffman Stadium. So, like, I feel like I might not be seeing it in its natural environment.
You've really not had much of a reason to go to Kauffman, aside from the fact that it's one of the great stadiums out there.
Yeah. Do you, and of course, you saw it both before and after renovation. How has the renovation changed it?
You know, the renovation is a lot family friendlier, I think. Like, center field is just a giant playground for kids. They've got all the cool stuff out there. You know, my kid, my older one is 7 now, and he's really gotten into baseball enough this year that he can sit for a 9-inning game and watch it and understand what's going on and appreciate it. But in the past, that place was a godsend in center field. Yeah. I mean, just going out, you know, riding on the carousel, and there's some batting cages out there and an ice cream shop and all the stuff that you need for kids. There's a bar out there now. I think, you know, Kauffman Stadium's a top 10 stadium, probably a top, like, 7 or 8 stadium. AT&T Park's number one for me,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
You can't beat that. PNC is great. I think PNC is an easy two, and those two are definitely the top two in baseball, and you can argue which is better between those two. But AT&T, the location, the way that it's built, and the fans there in San Francisco are beyond spectacular. I mean, that is, I think that place, if any, rivals Kauffman Stadium for as loud as I've ever heard a baseball stadium before, because the night of the wild card game, it, to me, is incomparably loud. It was like an SEC football stadium. I mean, it was like they had gone across the street from the Chiefs game at Arrowhead Stadium and just imported them into Kauffman Stadium and took that football attitude to a baseball ballpark.
Awesome. All right. So now, before we'll wrap up and then we'll do trivia. But here's my last question. I don't know if you want to save this for your column. I don't want to scoop yourself or how that works. But do you have a prediction on how the series lands?
I want it to go 7, so I'm going to say 7, and I'm going to say the Royals, just because I think that if we get to 7, it's going to be Bumgarner on short rest for the second time, and I think that he is going to be so taxed at that point that Kansas City is going to jump on him early, and whatever the case is, I think it's going to be a great series. I could totally see, you know, I'm 51% Royals, 49 Giants at this point. You know, an injury here, something there can totally flip the series, but I'm going Royals in 7.
Okay, so you're saying Bumgarner is going to get John Tudored in Game 7. keep all fans away from actual Swiss circulating fans, not actual fans. He punched a circulating fan, not a fan. All right, Jeff, thank you for doing this. I will see you out there. I'm very excited to get to go. I you know, it's funny. I was in Boston, St. Louis last year, and I have to say, I know this is not my 11th. This is only my second and a half, I guess. But I still. There wasn't a single game last year, even the ones the Cardinals were losing, that I was like, I wasn't like, holy crap, I'm at the World Series. Like, it still has that excitement to me. Does it still for you?
It will always have that excitement for me. We are two of the luckiest people in the world, and what we get to do. And the next day I feel like I'm working will be the first.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, all right, well, stick around and do some trivia with me, and then I'll see you out there. But first off, thanks for doing this.
Sounds great, man. Looking forward to seeing you.
Okay, today's guest is, thank you to Jeff Passan. You can follow him on Twitter at JeffPassan. This has been the Willis Experience, a podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back with the trivia version of this podcast on, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday. But enjoy the World Series, everyone. It's going to be awesome. All right, take care, so.